the main point and the issue that I think is what's wrong with the Black Stars going forward is that we have strikers that are not strikers. Look at Antoine Semenyo. When was the last time Semenyo played down the middle for his club side? He can't dispose of Solanke. He's had a fantastic season, but everything good he has done has come from the right wing. Let's go to Iñaki Williams. He struggled with the Black Stars playing as a striker. This season is probably his second best season he's ever had in Spain. Where is he playing? On the right wing, where Valverde initially introduced him about 9-10 years ago when he was coach of Bilbao. We have Jordan Ayew. Jordan at Crystal Palace, we've seen the numbers in the past 2-3 seasons, has played more as a winger, even at the point under Vieira was playing as a number 8. And so we have strikers who are not sharp when it comes to striker's instinct. I believe as a striker, every 2-3 games, you should be getting one-on-ones, opportunities to find your... Because you see, the thing about strikers is that you have to be in the position to get... It's more like muscle memory.
Yep.
Haaland knows what type of finish to go for without even thinking about it. If you look at Semenyo in the Black Stars, he's missing crucial chances because the zones and angles where he's getting the ball, he's not used to it. He's not, it's almost like he's attempting shots in positions where, oh, I haven't done this in like 2-3 years. Because look at the chance he got against Liberia. We had a corner, he ran the whole half of the field and forgot what to do when he got in front of the keeper. Why? Because he hasn't been in that situation for a number of times. Michael Owen says that strikers have to get volume of chances for them to choose their favorite type of finishes from more angles. If Semenyo was used to one-on-one down the middle and his favorite was going around the keeper or chipping, then he wouldn't now have to think of what to do.
Yep.
He also had a one-on-one against Comoros. Through on goal, him and the goalkeeper, once again, no effort on target. Against Mali, he had about 4 or 5 chances. And all of them, none of them on target. And that's because Iñaki has also gone through, it's not a personal problem. Iñaki has also gone through the same thing where he's struggling to get on the ball, to be found. And it's all because we have strikers who are not strikers. You know, the striking position is a position where you can say, oh, let me play elsewhere, and then today I'll decide to be a striker. It doesn't just come like that. The best strikers in the world do what they're doing without even thinking about it. Ronaldo, Nazario, Erling Haaland, Zlatan, it's all about instinct. That's what separates world-class strikers from average ones. And the problem with our strikers is that they cannot build this muscle memory because they do not play as strikers. Until we find a striker that wants to play or is going to play as a number 9 for majority of the season and get used to the position, we would have guys who would chip in with goals here and there, but we're never going to see anyone get close to Asamoah.
Wow. Okay. We'll see how that goes for the Black Stars there. You heard that from Ore Kwampofo. But and so this striker issue, Bill.
But it's true.
What do we do?
It's true. I mean, even in local level, we don't have, you know,
Abednego is
there. Please. Abednego wants to give up.
Abednego is there.
He wants to give up. But to be honest, even at our top clubs, so to speak, in local level, we don't have top out and out strikers who are scoring goals for fun. Hard to folk, you remember, it was an issue from their then head coach who was a foreigner. He talked about the fact that even at the Black Stars level, we don't have strikers. And it's proven to be true. Since Asamoah left, we've chopped and changed the number 9 position too many times, and a lot of them haven't really scored as many goals as we desire. We've seen Felix Afenajan there. We've seen Jordan Ayew being
tried
there. We've seen Benjamin Tete there.
Yep.
We've seen Semenyo there.
Bwachi
Adom. So many people have been tried in that position and it's not working. And so, I think it's one thing that the technical part of our GFA should have a look at, that in the youth system, we should now be searching for good strikers. Because right now, what we've come to have is great midfielders led by Partey, Kudus. We've had good defenders. Mohamed Salisu Sujiku, good defenders, right? Mm-hmm. Wingers, we are stacked over there.
Yeah.
Stacked, absolutely stacked. Anyone who is performing in Europe, whatever, he's going to find it difficult to get if he's a winger. We have a lot of wingers, but we don't have a top-level striker like what Asamoah is for us. So that is something that the technical part of the team should have a look at from lower levels, that's why they are now under 16, 17, 18, 19, 20.
Yep.
That's why we have all of them there. So now look through very well, find a very good striker who we can build, train, and help him in his career path so that he can come and do the job for, and not just one, two, three, four, that can do the job. Because
yeah, more competition.
Yeah, we need competitors. We need, you know, top strikers. Because I'm clamoring for Jordan Ayew, but we all know.
That chance should have scored.
I do not understand how
that chance should have scored.
You see, if you're a striker and you know you have 20 touches of the ball, these are the moments that you come alive.
Yep.
As a winger, you can afford to sleep sometimes, but in the box, you need to come alive and you need to sense this. And see, that's what I was telling a lot of people, if Ghana went on to draw after Partey had missed that chance, I wouldn't be mad. Because if you can point me to at least 5 times that Partey has been one-on-one in his professional career, then I'll say be mad. You know, people sit back and say goal scoring is easy, Partey should have done. Look, it comes to familiarity. That's why at a young age, under 17, you want your strikers to be getting one-on-ones and getting used. Partey has probably never been in this scenario in the past 3 years.
Yep.
Yeah.
And in the moment the keeper is rushing him, he's now thinking, hey, what do I do? It's not as easy as people make it.
Yeah.
Even though they are professionals, there's tension, there are a lot of factors that people don't look at. That's the reason why I wasn't so mad at Partey. He tried. He tried to do what he was supposed to do by chipping the keeper, but the execution probably lacked a bit. That's because he's not a striker. But if our striker was to miss that, then I would say, okay, now I can be mad.
He would have missed.
Semenyo?
Yeah.
I mean, he hadn't given us hope with what we had seen in the game. And, you know, my problem with Semenyo is that, like, a lot of his sort, like, the efforts that he had, they are off target.
Mm.
If you, like, take a look at all the 4 or 5 chances that he had in the game, all the shots were off target.
Yeah.
And I feel when you force a keeper to make a save, as a striker, it builds some confidence.
Yep.
It helps you sort of see that, okay, I'm starting to stretch him a bit.
Yeah.
But when it's off target, you just feel like, ugh, I'm just not, it's just not my day. And that's what you can clearly see from his body language. Very frustrated. He's running well, getting the chances, but he's not.
He told Ghanaians to believe in him.
Yeah, Ghanaians will believe in him. I'm patient. Mm. But then again, I'm not even blaming him because I don't think he's our fault, because at club side he's expected to do something else. When he spends 90% of his game running on the wings, creating chances for others, pressing, working hard, he barely gets chances at Bournemouth. If you do watch him, he just makes do of what the occasional chances that he gets here and there. That's why I was able to score 8 goals, and you're looking at Solanke double his tally.
Mm-hmm.
Because Solanke is the goal scorer, he's the primary one, and that's his responsibility at the end of the day.
Right. Let me get you into Facebook now. And Facebook, we have a few comments there, but this is the comment that has just popped up on my screen. Let me just read it for you. It's a comment in French, actually. Yeah. I think Bill, it's probably one of your friends you made in Mali.
Yeah, probably. Right. For me.
His name is Yendale Kombate, and he says, "Bravo to Africans today. I want to talk about football. I salute all the players. Salute all the coaches to take courage and also encourage them, and the fans need to congratulate them on their work. It's a profession that's not too easy. May God protect and bless them and guarantee them all their." I can't seem to figure out what that is. But he also says that they will not. Football supporters need to, you know, thank the players for how good they play. God bless you, protect you today. And also, he says that he wants to see Ghana win the game against the Central African Republic. Kombate, thank you so much for sending. Merci beaucoup for sending your message to the Sports Ultras right here on 3FM 92.7. And so that's just about it for Ghana's Black Stars. Bill, give me a prediction for tomorrow.
I think a 2-0 for the Black Stars.
2-0, clean sheets.
Oh, clean sheets. Clean sheet for Ziggy.
Oreku, give me a prediction.
Please hold on 1 second. Bill said Ghana will win by 2-0.
Yeah.
I want him to, let's go back to the time Ghana failed to concede in a game. I'm still scrolling, no.
Hey.
Okay, it says against Namibia.
Ah.
Even that match, guy, I watched the stream. Richard Foy made some mistakes. There were some, I think it was Salis gave some back pass. Charlie, that match, if it wasn't a friendly, Namibia would have scored us. But you, the last time we kept a clean sheet was against Namibia.
How many years ago?
That was right before AFCON.
Yeah, right before AFCON. That match that they said behind closed doors.
Okay.
Everyone right. could tell how that would go.
Yeah, all right. Anyway, so that makes it how many matches? Eight matches without the clean sheets.
So 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Six
matches without the clean sheets. Mm.
We'll break it.
So maybe
break it
today will be the day.
Yeah, tomorrow.
Central Africa.
Yeah. Oh yeah, we'll make it. Will be
the day. Central Africa, a decent side, you know.
Yeah, no, they are actually. The last time we played against them, I was quite shocked at how they were playing.
Yeah, I'm trying to also look at that. The last time they failed to score in the match was 2022.
Wow.
Hey.
Yeah, they're a decent side.
Oh, then so tomorrow then is the day.
They scored against Madagascar, Angola, Ghana, Comoros, Mali, Bhutan.
Oh.
And then Papua New Guinea and then Chad.
Oh, wow. So okay.
Scored. That's their scoring
streak. Not bad.
Okay. But maybe we'll stop them tomorrow.
Yeah,
maybe
we'll stop them tomorrow. Please.
So, Riku, give me a prediction.
You know Central Africa went to Bamako and drew 1-1, right?
Give me a prediction.
Give me a prediction.
I think it will be a very tough game, to be honest. And you know we have history with Central Africa. The coach cares that, so.
Yeah.
The AFCON that we went that were bad. You see, when we went to the AFCON, I stood there for a second and I said, we didn't make it out of this group not because we're not good enough. It was supernatural. Look, how do you scientifically explain that Cape Verde winner? That everyone in the defense just froze and then Richard Foy came to hold the leg of his defender. Yeah. How do you explain that Iñaki Williams gives a bad pass and then Bukayo comes to replace him and then gives
the bad pass?
You cannot, and then the utmost, the largest, the worst, Richard Ofori, Jiku, everyone is saying, leave, let it go. It's your goalkeeper that's supposed to shout at the defenders that, my ball, leave. This time, about four players, Amate, Jiku had their arms up, leave it. If Richard Ofori leaves it, goal kick, Ghana has won.
Why did he not leave
Richard
the ball?
Richard Ofori still did.
Why?
Nobody. Look, Richard Ofori, if you are listening, I would love to interview you. And I have just one question for you.
Why? Why?
No, I just want to give you a fair chance to explain to Ghanaians. What was running through your head? Like, this is not even a troll. I'm not trolling. I genuinely want, because you see, it was one. If you are trying to waste time, man, usually you go with two hands, you parry, and then when they are coming, you scoop it and then you lie down.
Yeah.
But this one is almost like, hey, I want to touch. I don't want to touch. And then he sort of, and you know the worst part? After he touched it, he said, "Media man, from his uncle." Come on, man. Come on. How do you explain to me that all of these things happened and his food? The coach cares that. The Central Africa. He said it here, Baba Yara, that the AFCON that we think we are going, we're not going to do it well because we don't play well. So this coach, we have a history with him.
We'll boot him again.
So you, back to prediction.
Yeah, prediction. Give me a prediction.
I think they will take the lead. I think we'll have to come from behind.
Again?
Yeah, I think we'll have to come back. Okay. And I think we'll do it. We'll do it. Maybe 3-1, 3-2.
Okay.
Yeah.
We'll see how that goes. Malise, if you are watching the stream, kindly cut Oroku's Richard Ofori parts. And you know what to do with it, Malise.
Yes.
This is a message for you. Anyway. Let's move on. And talk about Kwesi Appiah, whose Sudan side are also flying in the World Cup qualifier. Bill.
Yeah.
Kwesi Appiah is working magic with Sudan.
He is. At some point, Fatah Odado was also part of that group. I think despite the kind of struggles they've had, I mean, Sudan is a country where it's going through, you know, some political warfare and all of that. And so the coaches, the team, at some point, they didn't even play league football for months. Even before the World Cup qualifier started, they didn't play league football for months. And had to move to, I believe, Saudi Arabia to go and camp and then train and all of that. Imagine going to someone else's country to train and then going to play match at Libya stadium, not even your own home stadium. Mm. And you are still, you know, you are still undefeated in 3 games, 7 points. I think it's a fantastic, a phenomenal achievement by Kwesi Appiah with this team.
Right.
He might not eventually go to the World Cup with them, but you should always know, you should always keep in your head that, I mean, he's in a kind of place where the conditions aren't in so good for him to win,
mm-hmm.
so good for him to get results, but mm-hmm. he's getting them anyway.
Yeah.
And so we should really, really salute him for what he's doing so far. If he goes to the World Cup, it's a very big crowning moment for him. Mm. Maybe he might not go, but so far it's looking good.
All right. Now, so I look at Group B in the Africa's World Cup qualifying. The Senegal, I think they picked up some points today. Let me.
Yeah, they beat Mauritania 1-0.
Yeah, they beat Mauritania 1-0. It takes them to 8 points.
Mm.
And then Sudan on 7 points. DR Congo also beat Togo 1-0. They are on 7 points. Togo on 3 points. South Sudan on 2 points. And Mauritania on 1 point. So after all the noise about Mauritania's coach and how good Mauritania were at the AFCON, they have 1 point out of 4 games in World Cup qualifying.
And Otto has 3.
Yes.
Oh, beautiful.
Yes. They have 1 point out of 4 games.
Otto gets 6.
And they are essentially, I mean, out of 4 games, that means they are essentially out of the World Cup qualifying.
Oh, yeah.
It means that if they have to qualify, they have to win all the rest of the games.
Yeah. Otto over Abdu.
Which is almost impossible there. But so let's get it. Oriku, talk to me about the Super Eagles, though. What's happening to them?
I think they're fine. You know, the thing about Nigeria is that they've lacked consistency. The only difference between themselves and maybe a national team like Senegal is that Senegal trusted Abdou Cissé, and they've sort of given him that platform to build on himself. There was Gennet Raw, if I remember right.
Yeah.
And then after him, this AFCON, what's the name of the coach Afinidi to
Jose Pacero.
Yeah, Pacero, the Portuguese coach. Pacero, I think Gennet Raw finished third. Pacero finished second. None of these coaches were able to go medium term, long term with the team. And for me, I think that's a challenge, especially for a national team, because the way you do not get a lot of time with the players, you need to make up for that with some form of consistency, in the sense that if it's one coach, they know how that coach wants to play. They're always in communication, even during club football. They're able to communicate and keep on building on whatever it is that, you know, the game plan is. But here's the case where, for instance, Nigeria were literally 45 minutes away from winning the AFCON.
Mm.
And I thought if maybe someone like Pacero, with all the contract issues, were sorted and he was kept, then he can build on that.
Mm.
But all the hard work, I feel, has been undone, because everything that they knew and played for under Pacero, they need to reset, because Finidi George has come in.
Mm.
And I will be honest, the signs that they showed in the game against South Africa was good. It wasn't the type of draw where you would be disappointed. If you are going for the style of play, how they matched up South Africa, I think on the balance of things, they were maybe the better side on the day. The interplay, the way they move the ball around, there are signs that they are trying to improve. And I do genuinely think that once their quality is up there, they should be able to have what it takes to get out of this group. Because once again, Osimhen himself has not been consistent with the national team due to injuries that he's picked up here and there. And I do think that he's a world-class striker. He's their best player. In fact, he's the reigning African best player.
Yep.
And not having him in your team will definitely be a blow. And so I believe that in the match against South Africa, he was genuinely a very huge miss. But then again, I think it was an opportunity missed, especially because they are playing at home. Because if you do look at the group that they do find themselves, it gets really tricky for them. Because now things are extremely tight. I think Lesotho on top with 5 points from 3 games, and then Nigeria themselves are second from bottom with 3 points. Second from bottom sounds scary, but they're just 1 win away from topping the group. And that's the nature of these qualifiers. If Nigeria do win away to Benin, all of a sudden they're back in the running again. So it's not the worst result to draw against South Africa. They're probably most difficult opponent in the group. Now the challenge is to pick up other results elsewhere. And I do think from what they showed against South Africa and Definiti, I do believe that they should beat Benin away.
All right, Oriku, thank you so much there. And Nigeria, let me just take you through what the Nigerian group looks like. And it's actually a curious group because everyone in that group has played 3 games. And only Nigeria and Zimbabwe have not won a game yet. South Africa, Benin, Rwanda, and Lesotho have all won 1 game each. Lesotho topped the table with 5 points. Rwanda on 4 points. Benin on 4 points. Nigeria on 3 points. South Africa on 4 points. And Zimbabwe on 2 points. So the group is actually very wide open at this point, because one win could take you to the top. Another loss could mean that things become incredibly difficult for you in qualification there. But it's not just Nigeria. Let's talk a bit about Cameroon, because of all the issues Cameroon have had over the last few days in terms of management, and then the FECAFOOT, which is led by Samoleto, and everything about the controversy that's happening around the team, they still managed to win 4-1 against Cape Verde. Michael Ngadeo Ngaju scored, and then Vincent Abubakar gave back-to-back goals in the 25th minute and in the 43rd minute. The two Vincent Abubakar goals were sandwiched in between by Jose Montero's goal, who scored one for Cape Verde. And then there was Tolo, who came back in the 54th minute to add another one to make it 4-1 in favor of Cameroon against Cape Verde. So that's it there with Africa's World Cup qualifying. And let's head into the Ghana Premier League. So, in the Ghana Premier League, like I mentioned earlier, Tanobo Fakwa, Real Tamale United already out of the Ghana Premier League. But there are 6 teams, including Hearts and Dreams, who are unsafe with just 3 points, 11 to 16. Now, Bill, the Manchester Derby is happening at this moment there.
Yeah.
What are your thoughts?
Two teams who are fighting relegation, two teams who are to see each other go to relegation. It's a nice match. I think right now, the referee ended the first half prematurely. And because of that, the Hartlepool fans are angry. They are upset. The beauty of the derby, that is. I have a feeling in my end in the draw. I mean, Hartlepool have only defeated Olympics once in 9 games.
Mm.
In their last 9 meetings. And so it goes to show how they struggle against Great Olympics.
No, I think I understand why Olympics will be fine with the draw. Guess who they play at home last day of the season?
Who?
Relegated RT.
Ah, Efe.
I'm a feeling.
Efe. And how to folk are going to beat him. Yeah. A ground they've only won once since 2015.
I think Olympics.
It's since 2012.
They will be fine with the draw.
Wow.
if us like they should take the draw too.
But it's going to be really tough. Cause
now do you know the funny thing? Let me just show you. The most informed team in the Ghana Premier League so far is Heart of Lions.
Yeah.
They are the only team who have won their last 5 games.
And they are still not safe.
They are still not safe.
They are still not safe.
They are the only team who have won their last 5 games. Bill, what are they doing there in Pando?
I'm even shocked, because I remember the first half of the season. They had gone about the whole half without winning a game.
And it was something of very big concern. I think maybe Bashiru Heifetz, you know, coming in has, you know, galvanized the team in some way. But there's always that question, like a relegation threat inside, winning these many games in a row and, you know, getting to a point where they are going to be safe for next season. It's a bit shocking. But we'll see in the last game because, you know, they still have a chance to be relegated. So do Legon City's Karela, Heart of Oak, Dreams FC and Great Olympics. So it should be really, really fun on the last game.
So the Ghana Premier League table is always very... I don't know how to talk about it. Look, Samatex are on top now. Number two is Accra Lions, who some 3 weeks ago were in 10th place.
Yeah.
They are now second. Then Adriana Stars, third on 50 points. Brecon Chelsea, fourth on 50 points. Nations FC, who spent the whole season, almost the whole second half of the season at second place, are now fifth with 49 points. And then Medeama, who also knocked on the doors of actually finishing as league title winners, also now down to sixth place on 49 points. Bechem United on 48 points, Nsoatreman on 47 points, Asante Kotoko on 46 points. Then there's Bibiani Gold Stars, Lions, that's Heart of Lions, Legon City's Karela, Dreams, Hearts of Oak, Accra Great Olympics, who are in 16th, Bofakwa Tano, and Real Tamale United. So that's what the Ghana Premier League lineup looks like.
You know the thing about the thing that's interesting about the Heart of Oak final game against Bechim?
Yeah.
I think Bechim currently are just outside the top six.
Yeah.
And in the GPO, you only get paid money if you finish in the top six, right?
Yep.
Your prize money.
Yep. I think
the TV rights money everyone gets.
Yeah, everyone
but
gets.
But for the prize money, if you finish top six.
Yeah, top six, yeah.
So Bechim have motivation to actually win. If I do stand to be corrected, but if they do finish in the top six, then they qualify for prize money. So there is motivation to also finish high for them. I don't think they are good friends of Heart of Oak. And as you rightly mentioned, it's been some years since we saw Heart of Oak go to Bechim and win. And so the dangerous thing about that is that it's top six?
No, it's actually top 10.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's top 10.
Okay, then Bechim.
But if you are safe, you get you get 60,000 Ghana cedis.
And if you are seventh?
If you are seventh, you get 50,000. Eighth, you get 40. Ninth, you get 30. And tenth, you get 20. Charlie,
and then fifth, what do you get?
Fifth, you get 70,000. Fourth is 80,000. Third is 100,000. Second is 200,000. And the winner is 500,000.
Then Bechim United, listen carefully. Because as things stand, Bechim is seventh with 48. But they can climb to second or third, depending on how their final day goes. So they can earn like 40,000. Mm. Think about what you can do with 40,000 if you beat Hearts of Oak.
Hearts of Oak are in tough position. And
I can't imagine.
I mean, it's crazy.
Final D.
But yeah, this is a position where Hearts are in at the moment. And I know today, Olympics will not let it down.
Oh yeah,
and
they must not lose.
Yes,
they
will draw. They would not let it down at all. They'll take everything to hearts in this game.
Yeah,
but I mean, hopefully something happens to them. But Bill, you can take your leave now, and then Oreku, let's talk about your boy Carlos Alcaraz. Is there a possibility that anybody beats this boy to a Grand Slam title or to a very crucial? Because he looks like he just has the mentality and the tenacity for days like this.
You know, when you look at the center court for the French Open, it talks about reward for the player who is the most tenacious.
Yeah.
And I do think he has an overdose of tenacity. And it's not a surprise, considering the fact that he looks up to Rafael Nadal. And the thing about Alcaraz is that usually you see a lot of youngsters spring up, and then they fade away. But we've seen this guy go toe-to-toe with Novak Djokovic a couple of years ago. And 2 years down the line, he's still relevant winning Grand Slams. I think this is his third Grand Slam title.
Mm-hmm.
Still very, very young. Yep. And has the chance
to become only left with Wimbledon to win all four slams.
No, I think he's the Australian Open. because he won the World Cup. I think he won the World Cup.
Let me just check.
If I remember, he's won on grass, and he's won on clay, and he's won the U.S. Open too. So I think the career slam is just left at the Australia Open. I think so.
Okay.
But I think aside from that, he's a really great player. And sometimes I talk about the timing of generational talent.
Okay. Yeah. He won Wimbledon.
Yeah. Was that the one he beat Novak?
He won Wimbledon. He became the youngest Wimbledon men's champion since Boris Becker in 1985.
Yeah.
As a 20-year-old. So I think he'll
become the youngest to win the career slam if he wins the Australian Open either next year, the year after, or the year after.
That's crazy.
It is. And I speak of the timing of generational talent and when they do come in, because you can come in at a time where you may be talented, but unfortunately there might be a couple of people more talented than you and you never be recognized.
Dominic Thiem.
Yeah. Djokovic came in at the perfect time when Federer and Nadal were starting to fade away. Alcaraz has come in at the ideal and opportune time because Djokovic is starting to fade away. And now that he's picking up injuries and needing surgeries, you can bet that he's not going to be the same levels that he used to be. And so I do genuinely believe that is the Alcaraz era, but he's not going to be alone. There's Jannik Sinner there, who I think is also equally talented. And I do genuinely believe that the two of them are heads and shoulders above the rest. That's Rude, Rune, Zverev, and maybe to some extent Tsitsipas. But the next era of tennis stars would be these guys, Alcaraz and then Sinner. Timing is really important. Look at Tsitsipas.
Yeah.
Tsitsipas never won a Grand Slam.
Yeah.
But he...
Tsitsipas, Dimitrov.
Yeah, all of these guys came in at the wrong time. Yeah. But I think Alcaraz is here and he's here to stay. And, you know, it's the investment in his team that has ensured that he stays relevant. They check out his nutrition, his training. They include a lot of data science in the analysis, and there's that, you know, strive to be excellent. And I think that's what makes him stand out. So I do genuinely tip him to lead the next generation of tennis stars.
Right. Carlos Alcaraz, Carlitos, as they call him.
Carlitos.
And today he won the men's Grand Slam title at the Roland Garros. And Iga Swiatek also won for the women as well. I mean, she's also coming in there with a lot of force. 5 Grand Slams already to her name. I remember when she first came in and played her first Grand Slam match. It's crazy that she's won 5 in such a really fast time. Now, I think she's very, very... she has no empathy because in the semi-final, she finished her first 39 minutes, which was like... unheard of.
Yeah.
That you just beat someone in 9 minutes. But yeah, that's just Iga Swiatek and how she does it. But if you're a tennis fan, know that the Wimbledon will begin on the 1st of July. It will go all the way through to the 14th of July. And then there's more tennis for you at the Olympic Games, which begins on the 26th of July. After the Olympic Games, then there's the US Open somewhere in August. And so there's more tennis for you as and when it goes. But also, the European Championship, it begins next week, Friday. That's the 14th of June. Riku, we have just about 3 minutes to go. Who are your favorites?
Favorites for the competition, there's always the outright favorite. I believe France, if you're looking at quality of squad, France, England are there. Germany as hosts, a lot of storylines. Cruz also retiring. Could play into their hands. They have experience in the likes of Gundogan, and then the mixture of youth, Michel and Vets, they do stand an equal chance. Every home team for me is always a favorite for a tournament. We saw Ivory Coast use the 12th man to its maximum.
Yep.
And so Germany, England, France, I think, are the outside favorites. But you have to make room for the dark horses, the likes of the Croatians. And then maybe you're looking at, to some extent, I don't know whether... Italy. Italy are defending champions, but for some reason, I'm going to put them in the dark horses' turn. One team that I have forgotten, and a lot of people are not really looking at, is Portugal.
Yeah.
I do genuinely believe that it's all about the balance. If they are able to get the right I watched a game against Croatia, the friendly, and I just think in the first half they lacked a lot of verve and, you know, 1v1 threat, runners in behind. When they brought Liao, you could see a difference. Mm-hmm. They just have to mix it up and ensure that they maintain control whilst also being penetrative enough.
Yeah.
If they do find that, then they become favorites as well. Same to Belgium as well. So it's difficult to pick, but I'm going to go with France, England, Germany.
Mm.
And then for my dark horses, I'll go with Italy and then Croatia. Portugal, I'm not too convinced.
You see, the thing about the Euros is that I think the Euros is maybe the only tournament that has had certain unfamiliar countries win it. Because in 1992, when Denmark won it, everybody's like, how do Denmark just go ahead and win it? Czech Republic got into the final in 1996 when they played against Germany. Then in 2000 was a classic final between France and Italy.
Yeah.
But 2004 had Greece also win it, which was also very shocking.
Very shocking.
And then in 2016, when Portugal won, it was also very shocking because not many people tipped Portugal to win
it. Even win a game in regular time.
Exactly. So that means that there could potentially be one of these unusual countries that could walk their way to the title. But whatever it is, we'll see how that goes in there. So, like I mentioned, there's more tennis, but there's also more football because a lot of football is going to happen from now up until the Olympic Games also begin, where there'll be football there for you. And then right after the Olympic Games, then the leagues will start. So you actually have a lot of
Copa America.
There's even Copa America, exactly. So right after that, the leagues will start, then you are back again, Champions League, everything. The women don't like to hear that, but this is another summer where you basically have your husbands, boyfriends, whatever, still watching football and enjoying themselves. But this is how we wrap up the show. Riku, thank you so much for joining me today. Also, thank you to Bill. Thank you to my producers, Prosper Kuzu and Emmanuel Andam, who did a really good job today. And also to you for always tuning in.